Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host. It is January the 6th, 2017. Happy New Year to all of you. Hope that you all had a wonderful New Year celebration. Looking forward to a hopefully peaceful, healthy, and successful New Year, no matter how you measure success. It's always great joining you at the end of the week to play that game of catch-up, find out what's going on. And there's certainly never a shortage of material to discuss. Those of you familiar with me, familiar with the program, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since the terror attacks of 9/11, I have been a man on a mission, so to speak. And that mission is to educate as many of our fellow Americans, as many of our politicians as possible, about the true significance of America's borders and America's immigration laws. That's the purpose of the program primarily. Pardon me. Although I do on occasion go off into related areas, but today we're going to pretty much stick with immigration with one little exception. We do need to talk about the hacking of the Democratic Party purportedly by the Russians, what it means for us, what we're doing, what we're not doing, what we should be doing. But I want to start out by reminding you about my website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also have been writing for a wonderful organization based out of Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPSWeb.org is their website. I have been writing for them for years. Also, I have been writing for years for another terrific website, terrific organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center and their Front Page magazine. Today, in fact, we're going to talk a bit about my latest article for Front Page. That article is President Trump's Immigration Challenge to Undo Obama's Catastrophic Damage. I also write for The Social Contract. It's a quarterly publication, and the winter edition is being put to bed, as they say, in the journalism business. It should be available within the next couple of weeks. I can't wait to get the link out there so that you'll be able to read it. The publication is available for everybody's favorite price. It's free and it's online. So as soon as it's available, I'll be writing about it and providing a link to the magazine and a link to the article that I have written for them. And I'm working on another project, in fact, for the folks who produce The Social Contract. We're taking a hard look at immigration fraud, and I call immigration fraud the lies that kill. Pardon me, can't seem to get rid of this frog that decided to set up residence in my throat this evening. Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract has been running my articles for many years. Very happy to contribute to their publication, to the work that they do. Again, it's about dispelling the myths, the lies, and the nonsense about immigration. You know, when you think about something that we refer to as sanctuary cities, actually we don't, the open borders lunatics call it sanctuary cities, at the risk of sounding a bit like some comedian, George Carlin, the word sanctuary sounds like a place of safety, warmth, serenity. You can hear the birds chirping and the babbling brook, and you know, you get the warm fuzzies. There's nothing safe or fuzzy or warm about cities that harbor illegal aliens. And I wrote an article last week for CAPSWeb.org about being the need to make the New Year's resolution for all of us to be honest about immigration. And we need to be. And let's start with the word alien. Let's make it our New Year's resolution to stop this nonsense. And it's not about political correctness, folks. It's Orwellian. To not being willing to make a clear distinction between aliens who enter our country legally and abide by our laws and aliens who enter the country either enter illegally or after entering violate our laws. This is lunacy. I mean, bars and restaurants have bouncers, you know. If you misbehave, you get tossed out onto the sidewalk. If your neighbors carry on and do damage, you call the police. Why in the world are illegal aliens sacrosanct? Why are they allowed to come to America, take the jobs Americans want, get benefits that we pay for that they don't pay for, and undermine national security and public safety? And my position is not anti-immigrant, it's pro-enforcement. My mother was an immigrant. Her family were immigrants. My dad's parents were immigrants. My first wife, who tragically died of cancer 30 years ago, her parents were in the concentration camps. They were immigrants. Her brother was an immigrant. Many of my friends, many of my family members and neighbors were immigrants. There's nothing wrong with that. Coming here legally to become part of this incredible tapestry that is America is as American as apple pie. We spend over $14 billion per year. That's with a B. $1 billion per year on customs and border protection, ostensibly to secure our nation's borders and create a legal entry system that is run by the inspectors of Customs and Border Protection. In fact, my very first assignment when I became an immigration employee was to be an immigration inspector at Kennedy Airport. I was delighted to admit refugees. I was delighted to admit lawful immigrants. I was delighted to admit foreign tourists and foreign students. Come in accordance with law, abide by our laws, enjoy your stay in the United States, go home to your country if that's what you're required to do, or move up the ladder, become a lawful immigrant, and ultimately a United States citizen. That's fine. But the idea that we spend all this time and all this money and all this effort on a legal immigration system, and we're not even including the cost of the consular officials who issue visas to foreign nationals seeking entry. And we're not talking about the money that's spent on people that adjudicate the applications and all the other components of the immigration system. And yet we're told that somehow when an alien either runs the border, stows away on a ship, violates the terms of admission, that alien has an entitlement to remain in the United States somehow. Automatically. Come one, come all. Let's not make distinctions between people who are here legally and people who are here illegally. It's nuts. And you know the ones that are really hurt the most by this? It's the lawful immigrants. By not willing to make that clear distinction between legal immigration and illegal immigration, the lawful immigrants must feel like fools. They wait online forever. They finally come to America. They spend a ton of money on their attorneys and so forth. And people look askance at them because the open borders anarchists insist that no matter how you come here, everybody's an immigrant. It's dangerous. It violates common sense. It violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony. And it violates fairness for people who legally immigrate to the United States. And just before I started my program, I was watching Fox News and pleasantly surprised to see an old friend on TV today. And that friend is Congressman Lou Barletta from Hazleton, Pennsylvania. He had been the mayor of Hazleton. And Lou always does the right thing. I can always count on Lou. He just introduced legislation that would totally, completely defund each and every single one of the sanctuary cities. And Fox News estimates there's at least 300 of those jurisdictions across the United States. And I hope that this time his proposed legislation makes it through the process and is passed by President Trump as soon as he takes office. The idea of having cities that violate our immigration laws, that entice, induce, encourage aliens to enter the United States, confident that if they could make their way to a sanctuary city, they have nothing to fear. Well, aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing, harboring, and shielding are felonies. If you or I did it, DHS agents would be banging on your door looking to put handcuffs on you. Why in the world should cities be any different? How dare mayors and governors declare their jurisdictions to be sanctuaries for aliens who violate our immigration laws, and among them, I will tell you, are criminals and fugitives and terrorists, and we don't know who's who without a scorecard. And these folks have no scorecard. So Lou, once again, being the leader that he is, stepped forward and said, mayors of sanctuary cities need to be made to pay a price. Bravo, Lou. In fact, we just communicated back and forth, and I'm optimistic that, in fact, he will be successful. I really hope he will. I hope the leadership in the House of Representatives look at Lou's legislation and move it forward. It's time that we sent a clear message to the world. We are willing to admit lots of people, and indeed we admit over 1 million lawful immigrants every year. We admit tens of millions of non-immigrant visitors every year. But there is a legal system in place that first and foremost was put in place to protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers and national security for good measure. How in the world can you ignore those laws? So, starting off the new year with a bit of optimism, Lou Barletta, congressman from Pennsylvania, just introduced legislation to defund sanctuary cities. I urge you to reach out to your member of Congress and get behind the legislation. The idea that we would harbor, shield illegal aliens at a time that we worry about terrorism, at a time that 95 million adult Americans have left the labor force, this is not the time to be playing games with immigration. It's time to get serious. And I would add another suggestion. What we also should do is take sanctuary campuses, and I've written about this for Front Page Magazine, and I've spoken about it on my program. People like Janet Napolitano, the former head of the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I call DHS under her alleged leadership, is now the president of the University of California. She has declared her campus, or the multiple campuses of that university system, to be sanctuaries where she shields illegal aliens from the agents who used to work for her. If that is not an example of lunacy and duplicity, I don't know what is. Because if there's anybody on this planet, or certainly in this country, who should understand the true significance of our immigration laws, you would think it would be the former director of the Department of Homeland Security. So I'm urging you to please go to Lou Barletta's website. I haven't checked, but I'm sure Lou will have this up. Support this legislation. Go to your member of Congress and explain to your member of Congress that to not support Lou's legislation is to not support America or Americans. It's very simple. This isn't a left-right issue, folks. This is a right-wrong issue. This is a right-wrong issue. And as usual, Lou got it right, and I'm not surprised at his leadership. And talking about leadership, let's segue now, if you like, because I do like, about where President Trump now stands on immigration. You know, he said that he's going to get Congress to appropriate the money to build the wall and be reimbursed afterwards by Mexico. And let me tell you, if he's able to cut down on the number of foreign nationals who enter our country illegally, the drugs that enter the country illegally, the foreign workers who work and send money home illegally, he could actually pay for the wall with the savings that we would get, that we would accrue by effective immigration law enforcement. But as I've written many times in the past, the immigration system is a lot more than the Mexican border. In fact, the Mexican border, again, to draw on an analogy that I made quite some time ago, is simply the equivalent of one hole in the bottom of a colander that you use to drain pasta. And nobody would ever try to convince somebody that plugging one hole in the bottom of a colander would turn that colander into a watertight bucket. One of the issues that we really have never addressed, at least not throughout my entire tenure with the Immigration Service, and I started working for the old INS, I hate to admit it, back in 1971. Interior enforcement of our immigration laws has always been ignored, has always been an afterthought, has always been the stepchild of immigration. You know, the Immigration Service was, we used to say, the stepchild of the Justice Department. Interior enforcement was the stepchild of the Immigration Service. We never had enough agents. We never had enough emphasis. It's just absolutely been a travesty. And the consequence is that aliens know that if they can get past the Border Patrol, if they can stow away on that ship, if they can get in through an international airport and then be admitted, even for a couple of days, once they're out on the street, the likelihood of being caught is minimal. There is no deterrence because there is no enforcement. The arguments from the open borders crowd, well, we can't deport 11 million, so let's not bother trying. Let's just let them stay here. After all, if they've been law-abiding, now isn't that crazy? If they've been law-abiding, if they're here illegally, how are they law-abiding? There's a contradiction in terms, folks. It's the lies that we keep hearing. If they're otherwise law-abiding, the immigration laws are not minor. If you're unwilling and unable to keep out enemy combatants and spies and terrorists, you have no legitimate need for a military. On September 11, 2001, 19 terrorists, men barely out of their teens, inflicted more casualties upon the United States of America than did the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. So how is immigration a minor issue? The 9/11 Commission was crystal clear. First and foremost, the terrorists violated our borders, violated our immigration laws. And the way they violated our borders was not to run the Mexican border, but most were admitted through international airports or claimed political asylum and disappeared after the fact. That's how they entered. And when they looked at other terrorists in the decade leading up to 9/11, they found that of 94 such terrorists, 59 of them engaged in either visa fraud and or immigration fraud to enter the United States and embed themselves in the United States as they went about their deadly preparations. How insignificant are those laws when you realize that the failure of those laws has resulted in a series of terrorist attacks? In 1993, we had two deadly attacks. First, a Pakistani by the name of Mir Amil Khansi shot up the CIA in Virginia, January of 93. 1 month later, the first deadly bombing at the World Trade Center, six dead, 1,000 plus injured, $500 million in damage inflicted to that complex. One of the towers nearly came down sideways. Could you imagine what that casualty count would have looked like? I don't even want to think about it. Not inconsequential, not minor. But the hunger for cheap, exploitable labor is so great that both political parties have done nothing to enforce the laws from within the interior. Ronald Reagan gave us the first amnesty. Ronald Reagan never hired enough agents to get the laws enforced, even though the employer sanctions provision of the amnesty, something that every immigration agent was happy about, to finally go after unscrupulous employers, but that created a much enhanced work requirement, you know? More agents were needed to make sure that the laws had teeth, you know, the agents to go out there. They didn't hire more agents, but they sure as hell increased the workload. Right now, we've got about 5,000 or 6,000 immigration agents, and half of them are doing customs work. And if you go to Front Page Magazine, you'll find something interesting. Because just a few years after 9/11, there was a hearing held by the House Immigration Subcommittee. John Hostetler in those days was chairman of the committee. Today, the chairman is Trey Gowdy, but back then it was John Hostetler. I was called as one of the witnesses to that hearing. And John Hostetler went through this litany of all the ways that the creation of the Department of Homeland Surrender, again, as I call it, DHS, de-emphasized immigration law enforcement, hobbled all efforts at enforcing the immigration laws. And then, of course, along comes Barack Obama. And what he did was to decimate immigration enforcement. And then by twisting the facts and what is considered a removed alien, he took claim for arrests that weren't arrests. All kinds of nonsense has gone on for the last 8 years. But you need to understand that this is a long time problem, a long time in the past, going back for decades. It's got to end. And Donald Trump made it clear that he was going to make immigration his focus. And I believe that it was because of that desire that he had to focus on immigration that had politicians from both political parties running scared. Parties understood that there was great pressure to not enforce immigration laws. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Silicon Valley, various interest groups all have one goal, an unlimited supply of cheap foreign labor, an unlimited supply of foreign students, an unlimited supply of foreign tourists. That's what's been driving the bus. And the campaign contributions backed up their desires for immigration laxity, not immigration enforcement. Then along comes Donald Trump and says, no, no, no more. We're going to end all this lunacy. We're going to make sure Americans get first shot at the jobs. We're going to end the illegal immigration coming across the Mexican border. So here's the challenges that Donald Trump faces. If I had the opportunity to sit down with him, this is what I would tell him. Number one, interior enforcement is your number one issue. It's your number two issue. It's your number three issue, especially proactive interior enforcement. Now, what do I mean by proactive? People get married for money. It's a joke in the movies. Everyone thinks it's a ha-ha. Oh, the girl marries the guy and they fall in love and it's a cute story. And we've seen that how many times? Whether it's the movie Green Card or The Proposal, or it's been in the movies innumerable times. It's not funny. It's not funny. And citizens who marry aliens as part of a business deal should be prosecuted. And you wouldn't have to prosecute too many before people would say, this is a game I don't think I want to play. The Internal Revenue Service, think about this, every year, shortly before tax day, shortly before April 15th, they arrest a bunch of people for tax evasion. They might be school teachers, they might be clergy, they might be doctors, pillars of the community. Doesn't matter. There they are in handcuffs, being dragged into court, being arraigned and charged with tax evasion, tax fraud, whatever. Why do they do it? To send a message that if you are thinking of messing around with the IRS, we will take action. I call that deterrence through enforcement. On the other hand, where immigration is concerned, what do we hear? Well, the sanctuary cities are protecting those poor undocumented immigrants. Among them are murderers, drug dealers, the guy that killed Kate Steinle. He was undocumented. He had been previously deported 5 times. He needed protection, didn't he? How about what protection Kate Steinle needed in San Francisco? And those cases play out every single day, multiple times per day. The reason we heard about Kate Steinle was she was a very pretty young woman. A reporter got hold of the story and it made headlines because somehow when someone is beautiful, everybody pays attention. If she was a middle-aged person, an old guy, whatever, nobody would have noticed. I testified at the murder trial of an alien who I had physically deported, Ronaldo Rayside, a drug dealer from Panama. He had a green card, lost it because of drug convictions. He came back, and this was under the administration of Ed Koch, and I thought Ed was the best mayor of my lifetime. But Ed Koch maintained sanctuary policies. And when Ronaldo Rayside came back illegally, he was arrested not once but twice by the New York City Police Department, and they were under orders to not report such illegal aliens, even though unlawful reentry by a criminal alien is a felony. And because of a law that I worked on with Al D'Amato back in the 80s, that felony today carries a maximum of 20 years in prison, hardly an inconsequential crime. But the sanctuary policy was that the PD could not call immigration. And the third time he's encountered by a cop, the cop is 24 years old. His name is Robert Machete. His wife is pregnant with a little girl. This guy goes for Officer Machete's gun. There's a gun battle on a street corner in Brooklyn, and Officer Machete was killed. I testified at that murder trial. It was one of the worst occasions that I have found myself standing in court as a witness in the witness box testifying about the death of a young police officer. He was a casualty of New York City's sanctuary policies. Kate Steinle was a casualty of San Francisco's sanctuary policies. Dead bodies, and yet people would have you believe, oh, this is a victimless crime. Tell that to the families of the people who are attacked, killed, who are raped, who are robbed by people who shouldn't be here. Now, that doesn't mean that every alien who's here is a robber or a rapist. It doesn't mean that every alien who's here illegally is a robber or a rapist, but they're here in violation of law. And you can't sort out who's who and what's what. And we've got to adhere to laws. simple as that. And all illegal aliens are not Mexican, and they're not Latinos. They come from the four corners of the planet. This isn't about people with any particular ethnicity, race, or religion. That's what we're hearing from the media, the usual lies. Oh, the anti-immigrant people. No, I'm pro-enforcement. You know, anti-Latino. No, it's not. The Latino voters aren't happy. Well, wait a minute. What happened during the election? How many Latinos voted for Donald Trump because they understood the significance of the immigration laws? And now, you know, you look at what's going on with the intelligence community, and I have to tell you, if you honestly understand what's happening in the United States today, everything has been so politicized. We have a guy by the name of Miller, who is the head of counterterrorism for the NYPD, who said that if Mayor de Blasio destroys all the records that relate to these outrageous municipal IDs that have been given to perhaps a million illegal aliens in New York City, it would do no harm. It would do no harm. Now, this guy Miller had worked at the FBI. He was a reporter. He's been all over the map. And now he goes and says, oh, no, nothing to see here, folks. No harm if you destroy those records. Howard Safer, the former New York City police commissioner, issued a statement that was quoted in the Daily News, and he went nuts and said, listen, we shouldn't be giving IDs to illegal aliens, and now to destroy those records would make it impossible for our police and federal agencies to do proper investigations of these people. So understand that when you look at this guy Miller and you look at what we're hearing from the intelligence community, I understand why Donald Trump is skeptical. But if you really believe, by the way, and I'm going a little off again, but if you're going to look at the hacking issue, why then is nobody in the news media drawing the connection between Hillary Clinton's outrageous illegal use of those servers in her house that had no security for all intents and purposes? But that story has been brushed aside. No one's paying attention to that. You know that hacking is a problem. And yet the Democratic Party obviously didn't take measures they should have taken to protect themselves. And what's the allegation? Nobody lied about what the Democrats said. All that happened was the material was made public. It's not believed that it impacted the election one way or the other. Those of us who were speaking to our neighbors about the campaigns, you know, the people that were entrenched on the side of Hillary didn't want to hear the facts, and the people that were entrenched on the side of Donald Trump already knew they weren't going to vote for Hillary. So I don't think that it changed the outcome of the election particularly. It was simply because some people might have looked at it and said, those damn Democrats can't be trusted. And by the way, I'm registered as a Democrat. They embarrass me. I feel kind of embarrassed to say I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm an old-time Democrat, a Democrat who believes in blue-collar America, people like my dad, who was a construction worker. He was a plumber by trade, as he used to like to say. That's who I stand with. My parents made sure I got a college education, but it's blue-collar America that built this country. And so you see the hacking, and then you see where Hillary Clinton was reckless with national security material. Nobody's drawing that point. I don't care what station you're listening to. And right now, coming back to the immigration facet to this story, we have 514,000 foreign students in the United States studying the STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math. Included in that are computer programmers. And the countries that send us by a wide margin the greatest number of those STEM students, science, technology, engineering, and math students, are China and India. And as you listen to the coverage about the hacking of the computers, it's inescapable to hear about how often China hacks into our computers and commits espionage, how China is building its military, how China just put surface-to-air missiles on this artificial island they built in the South China Sea, and that's an international body of water, but they're claiming it is their territorial water. It doesn't work that way, but that's what China has done. They stole a drone, an underwater drone from the U.S. Navy. And a couple of weeks before that, a Chinese citizen was arrested and charged with stealing secrets concerning the Navy drone program. And where are the Chinese engineers who are building up the Chinese military being educated and trained? folks that are being educated and trained here in the United States. Their computer programmers who are hacking our computers likely receive their education in the United States. And when they commit acts of espionage, generally they come to America and corporations hire them, which makes it that much easier for them to steal secrets and send them back to China. You would think that if our federal government is concerned about hacking of our computers, concerned about an aggressive China that is adversary, not ally, could you imagine America's allies stealing one of our drones? Can you imagine the Brits taking one of our drones? Could you imagine Israel taking one of our drones, or Germany taking one of our drones, or Japan seizing one? No, that wouldn't happen. So clearly, China is an adversary, not an ally. Let's make a clear distinction. Why in the world are we training our adversaries how to build a war machine? After the 93 terrorist attacks, I've mentioned it before, I'm going to mention it again, there was a hearing held on February 24th, 1998, by the Senate Intelligence Committee about foreign terrorists operating in the United States. And a member of the United States Senate questioned this nonsense about the visa waiver program. It was a pilot program then, and she suggested that maybe we ought to reconsider it, maybe it should be ended. She also expressed doubt about the idea of giving visas to aliens who are citizens of countries that sponsor terrorism. And she certainly went after the notion that we are educating foreign students from countries that sponsor terrorism and training them to become biochemists and nuclear physicists. And she said, my goodness, we could be training terrorists how to create weapons of mass destruction. We need to look at that. And that senator, by the way, was Dianne Feinstein. Not some right winger, some liberal. But it was about common sense. It wasn't about left. It wasn't about right. It was about right or wrong. And so we have all these thousands of Chinese students learning how to be engineers and computer programmers in the United States, and then they go home to China and they hack our computers, not just Russia. Why on earth are we doing this? How in the world does this make sense to anybody? Why are we not filling our universities with American kids? I would rather spend money on taking children living in abject poverty and provide them with opportunities for free education. I know some of my conservative friends have a cow when I say it, but I'm not a conservative, and I don't make any bones about it, but I'm an American. And this is where the advantage of debate comes in. I'm not always right. I'm not always wrong. This isn't left or right. This is America. That's why the Founding Fathers talked about the First Amendment, including not only freedom of press, speech, and religion, but the right for peaceable assemblage. So people could sit down and have a conversation. They said, keep it peaceable. No guns, no knives, no clubs. Have at it. Debate, argue. Fine. That's the process. It's not neat democracy, but it's essential. So what are they doing on college campuses? They're shutting down debate. They're shutting down discourse. Because they know that the issues they are pushing are indefensible. They know that what is being taught on the campuses about politics, about history, about immigration, can't be defended in an open debate. They realize it. I've done debates on campuses. I've been to Yale. I've been to Columbia. I've been to Chapman Law School. I've been to Hofstra and NYU and other schools. I have no problem debating, but the open borders crowd does. And the reason they have a problem with debate is because the facts don't support their position. Common sense does not support their position. The laws don't support their position, and morality does not support their positions. There's nothing moral about exploitation. The reason that unscrupulous employers hire foreign workers, whether they're hiring them as illegal aliens to take a menial job, or they're hiring legal aliens who are working as computer programmers, is because they bring with them to America third world expectation of wages and working conditions. And that hurts America and Americans. That displaces American workers. That drives down wages. and it enables the foreign workers to send money back to their home country. We are losing hundreds of billions of dollars per year on the money being wired home by foreign workers, those here illegally, that money remittances, hundreds of billions. And if you take the multiplier effect into account, and if you're not familiar with the multiplier effect, it's an economic principle that says that if you put a dollar into the economy, it generates three more dollars in commerce. Conversely, if you yank a dollar out of the economy, you're really yanking three more dollars out because of the business that's lost. If you make a buck, you go out and buy a newspaper. The guy that sells the newspaper takes his money at the end of the week and he buys a pair of shoes, and the shoe salesman buys a new refrigerator. That's how it boosts the economy. That was the idea behind the economic stimulus package. But when you suck money out of the economy, the reverse happens. It stagnates the economy. It kills opportunities. Why in the world would anybody want to see happen what's happening? Losing hundreds of billions in remittances, driving down the wages of American workers, supplanting American workers with foreign workers. American workers wind up on welfare and safety net programs through no fault of their own, which further drags the economy down, which further costs us tons of money. And then we hear the lie, well, we can't deport them all, so why don't we just accept that they're here as long as they've been here for years and they haven't been in any kind of trouble, and we'll give them legal status and we'll move on. I was just on a radio show a couple of days ago with a gentleman who I enjoy being on with, and he asked me that question. He was the president of a state GOP. He said, well, Mike, how about if Donald Trump just puts up the wall, deports all the criminal aliens, and then we can let the others that don't have criminal histories remain here? And I said, well, it sounds nice on paper, maybe. But here's a couple of problems you're not thinking about. The number of aliens we're looking at is probably 30 or 40 million, not the 11 or 12 million we keep hearing. You know, the Congressional Budget Office back in 2007 did a study that said that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate kids who can't speak English. And back then, the report estimated there were 12 million illegals in the country 10 years ago. Of course, the Wall Street Journal would argue, they're leaving, they're gone, ask the Border Patrol. No, they're coming back. Not back, they're just coming. You know, they never left. This is foolishness. It's one of those lies. Just tell a lie, repeat it often enough, people begin to believe the nonsense. You know, when Ronald Reagan said a million aliens would come out of the shadows, we wound up with between 3.5 and 4 million. We're being told 11 or 12 times four. What do you have? That's the number. There'd be no way to interview that many people. There'd be no way to conduct any field investigations to verify the information in their application. So what does that mean? It means that aliens who haven't left their countries could come here 8 months from now, find out that there's an amnesty that's about to happen, and then they file the paperwork and they say, oh, I've been living in the United States for the last 8 years, whatever the magic time is. And then they make sure they got here several months earlier than the cutoff, and that's what they write down on the applications. It's a lie called immigration fraud. Immigration fraud was seen by the 9/11 Commission as a threat to national security. But how do you prove they're lying? You can't interview them. You can't send anyone out to show a photograph, knock on doors and say, do you know this guy? When did he move in? That's easy if you can do that, but you can't, because you're looking at the potential of tens of millions of applications. And something else that most people don't know, but to approve an application takes 20 minutes to a half hour. To deny an application can take days or weeks, because you have to have an agent go out and do that investigation, and then the agent writes the report, and then the adjudications officer has to write a denial, and then the denial has to be reviewed by an attorney to check for legal sufficiency in anticipation that the alien who's denied the benefit will file an appeal and challenge the decision. So the adjudicator takes the agent's report, writes the denial, takes it to the attorneys, they review it, and then it gets sent out. This is time-consuming. Because there are so many applications to be adjudicated, I assure you that what we're seeing now would have to continue to happen, where let's say there's a quota of 12 applications per day per adjudicator. There is no way that you could deny more than maybe one application every few months and still meet your quota. Machinery's got to be humming away. We got to keep those papers moving. Kind of like a printing press when you see how the newspapers are published. You know, the papers zipping by, that's how the approvals are going to be zipping by. Now, if let's say we legalize 30 or 40 million aliens, they would immediately be entitled to bring their nuclear family to the United States. So what does that mean? If their family isn't here, they get their husband or their wife to come here. They get their kids to come here. Typically, third world families have many, many, many children. It is not uncommon to have seven or eight kids. So even if only one in three legalized aliens has kids back home, it's entirely likely that at the end of the day, the total number of children that would be able to legally come to America to join their parents here would be greater than the number of aliens who would have applied for lawful status. Think about that number, ladies and gentlemen. Imagine, we'll be an optimist, 30 million aliens file for lawful status. What in the world would we do? And being, again, very optimistic, and I think this is a very low number, what would we do if 30 million children suddenly flooded America and had to be enrolled in school systems across the country? How many school systems right now don't have the funding, don't have enough teachers, don't have enough resources? How many teachers are buying school supplies out of their own pocket because their school districts don't have the funding to pay for the supplies? What happens if a school district suddenly finds that it has twice or three times the number of children to educate? And this is going to be particularly true in the poorer neighborhoods, which means where America's minorities are. What do you think this would do to the quality of education for American children? Now, let's remember that Congressional Budget Office study that said it costs 20 to 40% more to educate kids who can't speak English. You must presume that most of those millions of kids will not speak English. There may be gang members within that group, and that's not just boogeyman talk. It's reality. There was a hearing in April of last year held by the Immigration Subcommittee. Trey Gowdy chaired the hearing. It was an excellent hearing. Trey does a good job. One of the witnesses was a sheriff from the border state of Maryland. You know, we have 50 border states. And the sheriff said that since 2013, I believe the number was 63% or 62%, over 60% of the time that his deputies were called to public schools, intermediate schools, and high schools because a child committed a violent crime. The child that committed that crime had come to the United States from Central America during the surge across the southwest border. You talked about gangs infiltrating the schools who were part of that surge across the borders. What in the world would the American educational system look like if we suddenly had to add tens of millions of non-English speaking kids to schools across the country? What would the impact be on the education of our children, American kids, kids that are struggling right now? It would be devastating. What would this do to infrastructure? How many more people can we stuff into the buses and the trains and the light rail systems and the highways? Inflationary pressure as more people need more water, more electricity, more gasoline for more cars. You want to talk about sustainability? There's your sustainability question. Is this sustainable? And the answer is no. The answer is no. The people telling us, let's legalize the people who are here because we can't arrest them all, are asking us to jump off a diving board, but we don't know how deep the water in the pool is. We don't know how deep that alien pool is. How many people have broken their necks because they jumped into shallow water? Here, my concern is that the pool would be not too shallow, but too deep. What happens if we're talking about 30 or 40 million illegal aliens being legalized? Furthermore, without the ability to do investigations or interviews? What's the likelihood that among those people would be fugitives, criminals, and terrorists? Now I go back and remind you that on 9/11, 19 terrorists caused more mayhem, more casualties, than did the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. How many times do we have to get it wrong before the carnage is astronomical? Why in the world would our government do this to us, we the people? Why in the world would any politician do this to this country? What I'm saying to you isn't anti-immigrant, it's pro-enforcement, and it's ground on fact and logic. We admit 1 million lawful immigrants every year. Why on earth do we feel compelled to legalize tens of millions of illegal aliens who entered the country surreptitiously? They snuck in, obviously concealing something. What in the world would compel a rational leader to say, no problem, you can stay. You can stay, this is fine. You know, I spoke at a Republican event in Queens last night, and the gentleman who was originally from Haiti said to me, you know, there are people who came from Haiti, and then when they had the terrible hurricane, they were given temporary protected status, and now they're living in the United States, and Mr. Trump might force them to go home. How terrible is that? I said, well, I don't know what that means. I said, why were they granted permission to stay? He said, well, because the situation in Haiti was so terrible. I said, okay, I don't know that it's 100% better, but we're talking about something that happened 6 years ago. When you say TPS, temporary protected status, what does the T stand for? He said, temporary. I said, well, what does temporary mean? Not forever. You know, I want you folks out there to compare this to a hotel room. A hotel is not your apartment. A hotel is not your house. When I go to a hotel, I say to the guy at the desk or the gal at the desk, I need a room for 3 nights. And they say, here you go, Mr. Cutler. Here's your room. Here's the key. It's up on the fourth floor. Make a right turn off the elevator. I say, thank you. I take my suitcase. I go into my room. I hang all my stuff up. 3 days later, I get a notice. Time to leave. Here's your bill. Checkout time is 12 noon. Please leave promptly. We have customers waiting for your room. What I say to the guy at the front desk, you're evicting me, you're not treating me fairly? No. I went into the hotel with the understanding that after 3 days or after 5 days or after two, whatever it is, I'm going to vacate the premise and go back to my home. And when you look at the way that we've given temporary protected status, here's something else that you should think about. Many times, people that are given temporary protected status wind up as day laborers. Now, think of the lunacy here. So, there's an earthquake or a tsunami or a volcano or whatever. There's mass destruction of housing. Certainly, as a matter of compassion, we allow the elderly and women and children and so forth to stay in the United States. We don't expect old people to go back to mayhem or a woman to bring her kids back where there isn't clean water. But if you see guys who are working on a construction site helping to build housing, and they're getting temporary protected status when their home country needs to be rebuilt, why in the world do we have construction workers working in the United States competing with American construction workers instead of sending those people home and saying, okay, pal, you know how to build a house? Go home and build houses for your people. Take the skills you've acquired and use those skills to build your own country. What is unfair about that? And, you know, whenever I raise that issue, people look at me and they're slack-jawed. They have no answer. Gee, I never thought of that. See, the punchline to every joke isn't, and we let them stay here forever. That's not the way it works. No other country would allow it or should allow it. There is a difference between being an immigrant and a non-immigrant. An immigrant is permitted to remain here forever. They're on the path to citizenship. Non-immigrants are here for a finite period and are expected to leave. No different from a homeowner versus a guy that rents a room in a hotel for a few days. You come as a tourist, Don't stay. Don't work. Come as a tourist. You know, go wherever you want to go. Hopefully not Disney World, because they keep firing American workers, so the hell with Disney World. I wouldn't go to Disney World if it was free. Not until they start hiring Americans and stop firing Americans. You know, that's the other thing we should be doing, is voting against companies that screw Americans over. Vote with your wallet. Vote with your feet. Disney World fires American computer programmers and makes them train their replacement. You couldn't drag me to Disney World. I've been there before. It was okay. It was okay if you like Mickey Mouse. But to me, it's a Mickey Mouse operation, to use an old frame of reference, if you could fire loyal employees and replace them with people from India, who we've educated, by the way, in the United States. This is so destructive. And along comes Donald Trump and says, well, we've got to fix it. So here's what Donald Trump needs to do in the remaining time that I have this evening. He has to do more than simply hire more agents. And the reason that he has to do more than simply hire more agents is because we need more judges. We also need to change the culture of the agency. For 8 years, we've had a president who wanted to see agents fired if they arrested the wrong illegal alien. Doesn't matter if they're illegal. You arrested them, you're in trouble, because we have standards to meet. No police department tells their cops don't arrest people who violate the law in your presence. When I was an agent, that would never happen, until Jimmy Carter came in and he didn't want us to arrest illegals during the census because he was gerrymandering the congressional districts, hoping that the census would count the illegal aliens so more seats would go to the Democratic Party. That was outrageous. We had a situation in San Bernardino, California, the day after the terror attack, where the manager of United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, the adjudications people, ordered agents looking for a co-conspirator to not go into the office. They would not cooperate with the ICE agents, and those ICE agents were assigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force. There was a hearing about it, and it was written off by the Obama administration as a miscommunication. My rear-end miscommunication. Nonsense. And then you come to find out that this woman was nominated for the prestigious Secretary's Award for Valor. What kind of valor? Standing up to agents trying to look for terrorists? That's meritorious conduct in whose twisted world? So what we really need to do is hire more agents, focus on interior enforcement, stop having immigration agents doing customs work. Right now, there's more concern about counterfeit Gucci loafers than counterfeit passports. That has to stop. If you go to the ICE website, I call it dumpster diving, you'll see how many times immigration agents did anything but immigration, you know, finding false things or going after people producing kiddie porn. Listen, anybody who could do that to a child should spend the rest of his life in a padded room and maybe be surgically altered. I have no use for those individuals. But there are so many other law enforcement agencies that deal with those wackaloons. Why are you taking immigration agents, and we only have a couple thousand for the country, and sidetracking them with anything but immigration work? Immigration needs to be handled as the priority that it is. In some countries, the law enforcement personnel that handle illegal immigration and legal immigration are the premier people, because they are seen as performing a function that is an adjunct to the military. And ideally, I'd love to see President Trump bring back some of the old-timers who have the institutional memory that's been erased when we actually went out there and arrested illegal aliens. Took the job as seriously as we could, given all the restrictions, because, again, we've so politicized immigration enforcement for far too many years. But make no mistake about it. The incoming administration absolutely must deal with the issue of the enforcement of the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. E-Verify would be a good idea. But if you don't have agents to conduct the audits and conduct the investigations, E-Verify is meaningless also. It all comes down to the need for boots on the ground, agents who can go out there, make the cases, make the arrests, and we need to have prosecutors who understand how important it is for them to pursue criminal prosecutions. And, you know, one of the laws I'm proud of is the one that I worked with Al D'Amato along with Walter Connery, the former chief of investigations in New York for the INS, the aggravated felon reentry law. I've seen people from other agencies or immigration spend years putting together a conspiracy investigation. It takes lots of people and wiretaps. It's labor intensive. It goes on forever. And then they arrest the bad guy, and the bad guy goes to jail for 3 years. Reentry after deportation case can be put together in 2 days. And I've worked on some of these cases where the alien in question got 5 years in jail, and it took me all of 2 days worth of work. Pulling up the guy's file, getting the fingerprint on the executed warrant of deportation certified as being a match, going to the grand jury, getting the indictment, and arresting the alien in question. It's real simple. The impact is tremendous, and it deters people from reentering the United States if they've been deported. Let's use our heads and use our resources effectively, but let's not forget that fundamentally the immigration laws were enacted to protect innocent lives and the jobs of Americans. And if the Trump administration can make that the priority, it will be, as I said in my piece, one hell of a way to start a new administration and to start the new year. I thank you so much for tuning in, for listening. Hope you find the program to be of interest. If you do, please let your friends and neighbors know about it. Please check out my personal website, michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, and The Social Contract. And please get involved, folks. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. I look forward to seeing you again, same time, next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.